Radio Theater at 7, Monday Night R&R at 8, Live Local Music on Web Sessions at 10, and Recorded Local Music on Champagne Local 901 at 11. We're going to get to some underwriting, and then we will get to In the Know.
For decades, Consolidated Communications has built their reputation by delivering forward-thinking products, competitive pricing, and personal customer service. With Consolidated Communications, you spend less time trying to understand what loved ones are saying and more time communicating with them. Consolidated Communications is located at 1300 South Neal Street in Champaign, or online at consolidated.com, or available by phone at 217-344-4444.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to In the Know. Before we get to the show, I actually want to do a quick heartfelt thank you to those listeners who made donations and pledge drives during our spring pledge drive. Every dollar goes directly into keeping WEFT on the air. So if you like what you're listening to tonight and other nights and days during the week, definitely contribute. You can still do that and help us reach our goal of 15,000. Just go to our website at weft.org. You can pledge once, or even better, make a monthly sustaining pledge to WEFT. The website is weft.org/support, and it only takes a minute for you to donate. You are now listening to In the Know. Everybody should be familiar at this point with a very raw discussion that we have on this show. Tonight, we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people like to kind of skirt around. It's not comfortable for everybody, but we are going to be talking about racism and the election process. We know that there's been a lot of conjecture about the last election that we had. It's kind of one of those things where you see it and you know what it looks like, but people don't necessarily call it that. But before we get into that, I'm going to have my guests introduce themselves. We're going to start over here on my left with Tanisha.
Hi, so happy to be here. Tanisha King Taylor. I am the Democratic nominee for Champaign County Board District 10. I'm a PhD candidate in College of Education at Illinois and an adjunct lecturer in their School of Social Work. I also serve as a director in the Office of Dean of Students in our tenant union.
Awesome. Lots of roles we have going on over here.
And yes, I am Gus Wood. I'm a PhD candidate in the Department of History and African American Studies. I am the co-president of the Graduate Employees Organization Local 6300. I'm also on the executive board of the Champaign County AFL-CIO, a member of the North End Breakfast Club, the Speak True Collective, one of the co-founders of Black Students for Revolution, and many other hats that I currently wear. So it's an honor to be on the show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think when I was, you know, you came recommended by somebody who I talked to, a professor, Sundiata Shajwa at the UIUC, who's been on our show and had very passionate opinions about things. And so, you know, Tanisha, I'm familiar with your work from being friends with you on Facebook and seeing, you know, the different work you're doing in the community. Just joining us now, we'll give him a second to get comfortable, is Kyle Patterson, who's involved with the Young Democrats. But yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is one of those topics that people like to avoid, but yet we still talk about. That's the funny thing. People avoid it, but yet we still talk about it in some form. Kyle, if you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kyle Patterson. I think you kind of gave background a little bit.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think this is something where, you know, people are wanting to know, is there really systemic racism in the election process? People want to think that that's a fair system. But there have been enough headlines, I think, that have passed around in the last several years that we recognize that that's not necessarily the case. But kind of, you know, giving the overall education, in your opinion, why is it important that anybody, not even necessarily specific demographics, but anybody vote?
Voting is a very complex mechanism under the United States structure. I think that us having the right to vote and exercise the vote, there's so much history behind that, that we should definitely exercise it at multiple costs. But what comes with voting also comes with knowing what your vote means. So what are the stakes of voting? And so a lot of the political education, not necessarily electoral politics, but political education in terms of understanding your social conditions and what your vote means, should be a very important part to the voting process. And I feel as though, particularly at the local level, from my particular ideology, the local level voting process, elections, are going to be the catalyst for building a new society to where we can actually have legitimate progressive social conditions. And so, you know, I'm very happy that we have people here in Champaign County running on local platforms with local ideas about building the space up, because I'm a firm believer in not doing top down, but doing bottom up. You build the local, then you can actually strengthen having local leadership, what we call institutions of agency, and have those people go up into the state level, actually knowing that they're going to be carrying their constituencies or the masses' ideals to that state level, and then taking it possibly to the federal level. Because right now, I see that the only uncorrupted area to where we can build is the local level right now, because this is where the ideas are coming out, and this is where the people's interests are first represented here. But this is a very complicated process, but we need to know how it works and how it operates before we just cast something.
Right. And that's actually a sentiment that, Kyle, you shared. We had a show where we talked just about the election process and how helping people really to understand what each of these open seats, how they affect their everyday lives, because I think that's where people have that disconnect. Like, why would I care who's on the county board? How does that affect my life every day? Why would I care what the state attorney general, who that is, how does that affect my everyday life? You know, so, you know, Kyle and the other people who were on the show did an amazing job in helping people to have that appreciation. And that was actually one of the sentiments that he shared was, you know, all of these huge grassroots efforts and these big, you know, social changes that we've seen started locally. It wasn't some federal person saying, like you said, oh, hey, let's change the world. It was people down in the field on the front line saying, no, we have to change. And so how do we do that? Yeah. What were you going to add, Janisha?
I was going to just share the sentiments that, especially in the local elections, where it's very important for folks to just have a voice and vote for the people that they're putting into office, right? Making sure that they are researching them and that they get an opportunity to find out who they are and what they stand for. And so you need to vote, and it's important to vote so that you're putting people into office that will fight for you and the issues in the community that impact you on a daily basis, and having that... that sense of agency that he talked about, being able to be in the forefront of that, that's been compromised historically, systemically, right? And which is why people aren't necessarily attempting to run to the polls as much as they used to. But I think we have to do a better job of explaining, like you talked about, Kyle said, explaining why it's important to go out there and get it done. That grassroots approach is really important, especially for folks that are not necessarily involved in the political process to vote for what they want to see happen.
So that's kind of a good segue. So why do you think people don't vote?
Tanisha brought up an incredibly important part, that there is a historical foundation related to the problems of voting that, I mean, they just number down the line. The first one being that the interests are not represented in the predominantly a lot of the candidates. The candidates come to the table running on whatever platforms that they're particular profiteers or et cetera tell them to run on. You know, the old saying goes, particularly at the federal level, you don't pick the president. You don't get to run for president. Somebody selects you to run for president based off of their ideals and their interests, right? And again, this facade has been uncovered for so many years at this point, particularly amongst the African-American community, when there are so many restrictions and so many laws. I mean, this is political economy. There are policies in place that affect disproportionately working class African-Americans, which is about 76% of us, from being able to vote. And it's not solely looking at particularly formerly incarcerated people, but we're also talking about restrictions based on things that had to do with 200 plus years ago, like land ownership, block grants, redlining, these types of things that we know for a fact happened. Like, the reports have come out, yet there have been no indictments. There is no court system that will rule this in, because they have legalized this criminal behavior of taking away our right to vote. And that's one of the major reasons why people no longer trust the electoral process system. They have great reason not to. It doesn't work for the masses of people. And when we ever have time to do this on the show, I can tell you why it wasn't set up to work for the masses of people. You know, this was written in the Constitutional Convention of 1787 that we are not going to allow the masses to select the leadership of this country. And this was never going to happen. And they understood that after Shays' Rebellion. So, and there's a lot of details about that if we have time later on.
Yeah. Kyle, what do you think? Because you do a lot, especially when it comes around election time. I've seen your posts and you have a lot of great information that you share to really help kind of people to understand what's really going on versus maybe what headlines say is going on. So why do you think we see such a disconnect with people being passionate about changing the country, but yet aren't going to the polls to, you know, assert their right to vote?
I think you see a lot of apathy. I don't want to be redundant and reiterate a lot of what Gus said, but I think a lot of that, and that people don't feel that it matters. A lot of times, it's specifically African Americans, amongst other groups, just feel that they have been left behind, and rightfully so. So you see a lot of people who just feel that it's either way, it's not going to matter. I mean, I personally feel differently. While you know we might not have perfect politics out there, there certainly are choices we're given. Not always the best choices, but there are choices. But I think that a lot of people, you know, also kind of view it as, you know, what's one vote? One vote's not going to swing an election, which is actually not true. But typically it's not. But, you know, I've said before on the show, we don't avoid littering because we think that we're going to single-handedly save the environment. But it's still something that you make the effort to do because that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what you tell people when they feel their one vote's not going to make a difference. But, you know, we do need to call on our politicians to be more accountable to the needs of the people. And there's a lot of people in society that are just completely ignored by really either mainstream party.
Because, you know, there was a piece that came out about a year ago that was talking about who those key, we always have that buzzword, key voters are. And they were saying that there was a certain demographic that got Obama elected, and then there was a certain demographic that got Trump elected. And so, of course, there's always going to be this discussion and argument of if there is racism and if there is, you know, any air of impropriety when it comes to the election process. There's always going to be that discussion. But they were talking, the article went on to talk about how you had people who came out who had historically not necessarily come out when it was Obama, because for once they felt like there's somebody who's representing me. And people who were made comments on that, don't you love the comment section of all the articles, had said, well, it's just because he's a black president. That's the only reason why. And I bet the people didn't even know what his policies or his campaign was, which is kind of a slap in the face to say that people just went out and voted because somebody was black. And then on the other side, but they also said there were people who said the same thing about the Trump election, that they didn't really listen to a whole lot of what he said. But I think there is that piece that you're talking about, where people just don't feel like it counts. But again, if you have a whole bunch of people who have that mentality, then it does count. Because if you have 1,000 people who think like that and they don't vote, does that make a difference, especially on the local level? What have we kind of historically seen, and this is kind of maybe where you can elaborate more, but, you know, it's not just even, you know, African-American voters. You know, we've talked about women coming out and voting. You know, where is that voice? You know, Tanisha, you've talked about work that you do with, you know, along the level of empowering that demographic. So I think what we need to see is more discussion as far as what has happened historically, why we've seen those numbers, and what we can do to change it. But why do you think we've seen historically that these certain populations just are not represented, even though we see more females in politics?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with our current social conditions. I mean, we look at the raw data right now. We are in what my advisor and friend Sundiata Chajua calls a new nadir. We are at our lowest level in relation to not only race relations, but also socioeconomic data. The housing crisis that's rocking the entire country right now, wages are stagnating in a lot of places, regressing in some. We saw a little bump early in January when you look at some of the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, but it's only a small bump. And because of the tax cuts and the current tariff war that's happening right now, we're expecting those wages to plummet again. Right. So when you look at a lot of this economic data, things have actually gotten worse. worse since the recession. Most of the job, 95% of the jobs that came back after the recession were what we call sub working class jobs, meaning temporary unstable labor with no benefits, minimum wage, etc. So right now, a lot of people are feeling like there is no, that, you know, again, we came out and we voted for Barack Obama because he had this major idea of change and we're going to do this and that. But things got worse under Obama. Not to say that he's fully responsible for that. He, you know, there was a long line of presidents before him and cabinets before him and state governors before him that increased a lot of the problems that he himself exacerbated in a lot of ways. And so when you get to this point of a new nadir, you know, in terms of a more theoretical approach, when you feel like there's nothing else left for you to do and you know that you voted for this many times, mm-hmm. and you have young people seeing their neighborhoods getting worse and worse or people being driven out of areas and people are telling you all the time that, yeah, your vote counts. Then, I mean, look at the numbers. The numbers speak for themselves. There are 238 million eligible voters in the United States. Trump got 60 million of those people. That's it. So again, it's not even about that. We talk too much about the Trump getting votes from people who should have voted for somebody else versus the voting numbers are plummeting across the political parties, the entire U.S. structure right now, because there is a disillusioned group of people, predominantly African-American, women as well, Latinx people, et cetera, younger people who were saying, what is happening to our conditions? They are getting worse. As time goes on, that mm-hmm. is not supposed to happen. They understand that there is an irregular correlation happening in the election process. There must be an alternative means to improving our social conditions, whether it be through other strategies of protests, whether it be building movements or resource allocation within a community, looking back at some of those other things like the Black Panther Party was doing. Mm-hmm. So people are exploring alternative means right now and saying, I'm not going to vote for somebody you're telling me to. If I do not believe that person represents my interests. And I think that's the major dilemma facing the political structure right now that I believe the local political structure can fix if we have people who are truly adamant about working solely for the masses' interests and we hold them accountable to doing so, then you can see the birth of or transformation of the political structure from the ground below. And that's what I think we should be fighting for.
So how do you take that passion and put it into action? Because I think that's where we see a lot of disconnect overall, no matter what the area is, whether it's politics, parent engagement at schools. You see a lot of people who voice the passion, voice the desire, but it doesn't translate into action.
I think it's more about exposure to the knowledge of who we are and what we do in the political sphere. How many doors did I knock on that people were like, what is county board? What do you do? What Uh-oh. Does that mean? People
okay, say, so oh, what no, do they do, Tanisha? Let's educate right you. Now.
That's right. So the county board serves as like a township, right? And governs and oversees and approves budgets and other very important matters in our local community, such as the sheriff's office, the police force, the nursing home, the satellite and downtown jail. So budgets related to those instances, things to vote for that are integral to the existence of those places is mm-hmm. what the county board does as a whole, right? We each get a vote on particular things that are on the agenda related to those items, right? And so if you have family members that may end up in the nursing home or are there now, those are issues that we oversee, look at, and approve or not approve, such as the sale of the nursing home, right? Those are the mm-hmm. things that the county board looks at and deals with. And so when people hear that and they get this knowledge, they're like, oh, they get this relaxation, they feel more informed, and then they feel more empowered to figure out what do I do next in a step, and then they get excited mm-hmm. if they're agreeing with what your platform is because they see how it's now going to impact them.
Right. So the other county board member in the room, Kyle. So, you know, following what Tanisha says, you know, kind of relaying that back to them. But why do you think that it is where, again, you probably see it on Facebook all the time. People are like, yeah, we're going to do this and this needs to happen and our elected officials need to do that. And then when it comes to vote or even attend a county board meeting or a city council meeting or something where your presence shows support in a direction, why isn't it happening?
County board meetings are pretty boring. it's important stuff. I'm not... It's not boring to me, but I don't understand why somebody wouldn't be super motivated to go do that on a Thursday evening. Tend to go pretty long as well. But I guess it's kind of hard to say. I mean, when you know, a lot of times loud voices take up a big presence, so you do have people out there who are very passionate and trying to get people motivated and organized. But, you know, the question is, you know, what are the silent masses doing? And those are the people that you never know about. And a lot of times, even when, you know, working on campaigns, particularly primaries, where, you know, you have a lot of different activist groups and you're around a lot of that and you're trying to feel the vibes, you know, it's kind of hard to figure out, well, all these people like so-and-so, but that doesn't mean that the other 50,000 voters are going to feel the same way.
Right. So, who's not in the
room? Yeah, you know, I think that people, a lot of people are disenchanted in this country. I mean, people feel that there is a very solid system in place that does not take into account the average person. I think people feel that way about Washington as well as Springfield. Hmm. And I think that voter apathy led to our president being a reality TV star. And I think that a lot of people have woken up. I mean, we saw a record turnout in the midterm primary this year. 57.4% of the ballots taken were Democratic ballots. That has never happened in a midterm before. So I think that people are sort of waking up because of particularly the White House. But, you know, this is something that, you know, we have systems in place that just make people feel as if they're disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm. I saw a, it was kind of funny. I love YouTube. Anybody can be a YouTube star. But this one person was talking about comparing our current administration with the Reagan administration and trying to find a lot of different parallels there. And I thought, well, there's some things you're kind of grasping at straws. But the one thing they said was people have this tendency to either trust that the system is going to work because they're coming from a place of privilege. And if it doesn't work, hey, it doesn't affect me really. Or two, like what you were saying here, that they don't trust it. They know it's not going to work. But like you said, it's never going to work. At this point, what, like you said, what reason do we have to believe that it's going to change? You were going to add something, Gus?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm a leftist. I firmly believe that this system was built solely to work as it currently does, not for the interests of the masses. I mean, when you look at the Constitutional Convention notes of 1787, that's literally what Madison was talking about, is that we cannot allow the masses to have power to determine how this country is run. I mean, it's literally in the notes, and they have done a very good job of doing that. But I think that the way that this voting structure could ever work for people is if people have control of said voting structure. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that look? There are a bunch of ways to do this. The first thing is that there has to be some type of mandatory town hall meetings amongst elected officials and their constituencies. And I'm talking about these things are timed. And they are very structured. There's some type of formalized plan of accountability, evaluation systems for said elected officials that are determined by the people of the area, of the space. Mm-hmm. And after that evaluation goes, if they decide that after 6 months you are not doing what they consider to be their interest, then they have a vote to remove you. Plain mm-hmm. and simple. And again, I know that's not part of the current system, and that takes a long time to develop. But to be honest with you, we can talk about all these different issues, but they all come back to one thing, is that people do not feel like they are a part of the electoral process because of the historical and the contemporary processes that have excluded us from the electoral process. And how do we fix that if it's ingrained within the very Constitution that governs this country? You can't do that unless you transform the entire thing. And I argue that we have a chance of doing that, because I'm very harsh on electoral politics in general. But I believe that there is a very powerful thing in local leadership, mm-hmm. because I'm a student of Alden Morris. And Alden Morris argues that agencies of institutions in local communities develop local leadership to be that representative of the voices of the masses. And they develop themselves through running a community or being an elected official for that community, being somebody that is a community law enforcement, because, you know, like the person would actually be like a, you know, patrolling the neighborhoods like we did in the 70s, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And they would go on after they've been approved of by the community to take their interest to the next level. See, right. We do it from the ground up. It's more of a Gramscian model of developing community and changing the production of culture so that we recognize local leaders can run on our interests and can transform a structure. Mm-hmm. But we have to seriously make a formalized plan to do that. And a lot of it first has to do with the research of the community and what are the needs, the actual social needs of the community that we must serve.
So how do you handle it when you have a town hall and your elected official doesn't show up? Case in point, there was a town hall that was held on the U of I campus to talk about gun violence. And there was a specific representative who did not show up. I later heard, this could be complete rumor, I don't know. But I heard that this representative actually contacted the principal of the school that some of the students, the high school students, were representing and said, who put them up to this? And so, again, not only do you have somebody who hasn't attended, but they have reached out into the community, reached out into the other people who are trying to advocate. And instead of engaging and saying, you know, wanting to, you know, even meet with the students to have a conversation, it was who put them up to this. So when you have people who, especially when champagne is very word of mouth and that can spread like wildfire, How do you work with that then? I mean, that's, again, another question. This is the reality. Your elected officials are your reality. But how do you work with it in the manner of changing the mechanism so that it works for you? What do you think, Janisha?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's about what Gus talked about, right? Accountability, choosing to hold our elected officials accountable, which we could implement a new structure to put that in place locally, but we would have to have people dedicated and committed to do that. Mm-hmm. What I've seen is a lack of accountability, whether locally or nationally, related to politics and the work that we're doing. We've been reactionary as opposed to proactive,
right,
on a number of things. And so if we chose to relook at it and felt like we had a body and a good number of people to get in and do the work to do this restructuring, what Gus talked about could work, right? Where people reevaluate what that person that we elected is doing and then get them out. And so if they don't show up to a town hall, that's going to be a minus point or whatever system we come up with to remove them. Mm-hmm. My 8-year-old son would very much agree with Gus and say, if they say something wrong and they're not doing what they're supposed to, they're out of there. That's mm-hmm. his thought. And that would work really well. And if other communities modeled that, right, the bottom-up effect could really be effective. But when you guys were talking about Trump, what people fail to realize, right, he's a symbol of what America has looked like since the inception of America. Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. And so I feel like people have are saying things as if this is a new. No,
right.
This is what everyday walking around people have been doing for years. That's why it's systemic mm-hmm. and institutionalized in these various spaces that we operate within every day. Our educational system, mm-hmm. Our higher education system, any space that we occupy, we see people that represent the ideals and values that this person has brought to the forefront.
Well, and even with, I think, with his administration in particular, we see probably what he would say is what you're recommending, that if it doesn't work or it's not working out, they're out of here. Because how many people has he fired at this point? Mm-hmm. Or people who have left his administration voluntarily? So again, it's
it's a little different.
But I bet he would argue that. I was talking to somebody about an article that came out that, North Korea was thinking about reevaluating what they're doing right now, as far as like the weaponry that they have. And he said, I bet he'll co-opt that. He'll somehow take credit for that, even though that's them making a decision as a country. He'll somehow co-opt that. But we see that a lot, even as a reaction. I think we see people co-opting other people's ideas for the sole purpose of feeling like they wanted people to think that they're part of a solution, even when they had nothing to do with it. But I think you also see a lot of, like in his administration, people being attacked to bring them off or bring them down when they oppose. I mean, even locally, there was, I believe, a county board member who somebody went after. I can't remember the exact details, but a lot of people thought it was based on race. And they were going after them, I think, to try to bring them off the board or to question their eligibility to serve on the board. Again, we see these kinds of things that are not conducive to any type of exemplification of what a body is supposed to look like that can work together, even opposing views, how we bring them together. Because I've told people who oppose things, for instance, on my Facebook page and the stream of comments that come with that, even if you don't like what they're saying, that is still the reality of your world. Those people exist. Their opinions very much exist. And the action that they put behind that is very much a part of the world that you live in. So it'd be better to know that they're out there and know what they're thinking, to know how to approach your work, than to be blind to what other people are thinking. Because then I think you set yourself up for automatic failure. Because like Kyle, you were saying, that silent group, you'll never get to these people who are not talking, because you'll never know what their intent is. But, you know, I think it's hard to figure out what that magic mechanism or grassroots effort would look like. Why do you think, though, articles make it seem like the GOP is specifically targeting African-American voters? What do you think, Kyle?
Could you state the question again?
So we see a lot of, again, media is fun. It can have its own opinion, whether it's truthful or not. But for instance, I think it was a couple of years ago where they were talking about making it harder for specific demographics to register to vote. Mm-hmm. And it was very, people were saying this was very much a right agenda, that's what the right was trying to do. They were specifically going after this demographic to make sure it was impossible for them to register to vote.
Now, I mean, without going into any discussion about just, I guess, the idea of like beliefs of white supremacy or racism, just looking at it as a math equation, 95% of African Americans vote Democratic. And I think that that's why you see policies like stuff like voter ID. 20% of African Americans don't have adequate ID to vote. And that is a complete... Sorry, not being very articulate. There's a completely disproportionate characteristic of African Americans. And that's why they try to do laws like that. That's why they do things to make it more difficult, whether it's consolidating polling places or eliminating early voting times or having certain things like that at inconvenient times or places. These are all different strategies to make it more difficult for people who, and a lot of times you also look at the fact that African Americans are disproportionately in poverty. So when it comes to having the luxury or privilege to be able to conveniently vote at your own pleasure, that's something that lower income people don't have. So, so by making it more inconvenient to vote, you know, there's no reason why every single state in America doesn't have month-long voting. There's no reason why. And I think it just sort of goes to show that it's, you know, people are very, you know, a lot of people think there should only be one day of voting. And I mean, a lot of that's intentional.
And I think it's all of the examples that you gave, I bet a majority of people don't want to believe that that's what's at play here. They want to believe that we have a great system. Like you say, this mechanism, we have it. It works. It's worked forever. But that is such a subjective term as far as what works. But I bet a lot of people, you know, would think, no way. There's no way that this specific time, the time frame, any of that is in play to make it harder for certain demographics to vote. But I think there's also a strong level of denial in all sorts of levels of politics.
Yeah, I mean, like an example, you know, so early voting times, typically the Saturday and Sunday before the election, the voting time on Saturday will be from 9 a.m. to noon. Go to the campus early voting site and see how many people on campus vote at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. But then you go the following day, the Sunday before Election Day, they have early voting from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. It is jam-packed on campus. But things like that, like little things like that, or the fact that we have a predominantly black church in Champaign that gets out of church at noon, but the polling place that's actually in that church doesn't open up until 1. You know, there's these little things that really do have a huge impact by just little... inconveniences, and if you're not paying attention to local government, it's easy to sort of sneak in little tricks here and there.
I mean, a lot of times, you know, we talk about we want to, even in the K through 12 level, we want to have teachers who represent the students. So why don't we have more black teachers? Why are we not recruiting them better? Same thing with higher education. Why do we not see that? But I think that's what we're starting to see politics being predicated on. We're not seeing a representation of what you're saying, what the masses want, what they need. So I had a woman I met at a national conference saying, we need social workers who run for office. Like, we need to see them representing what they work with every day. I was like, well, I'm a social worker. I'm not sure I want to do that. But I do other stuff like this show. But again, you know, you have you have these ideals and these concepts, and you know, that was one of the things Kyle mentioned on the show the last time, was you have people coming in with these ideologies, and they are very true to their ideologies, mm-hmm. and that's what you see reflected in how they vote, what they do when they're on, when they're in office. But there's this other idea that what you saw with Obama, and again, this is people looking at, you know, outside looking in, that they come in passionate, they have these ideas, and they get burned out because they become part of the mechanism, and the mechanism can block them in a variety of different ways from what they want to do. That's why social workers are saying, well, what place would we possibly have if we're going in driven by passion? Our passion will get burned out. But that's where the disconnect comes, I think, where people don't realize that that's actually what is needed to come in representing the people who are supposed to be your population, your group that you're involved with. There was, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read it, but there was an article that was talking about, it's an action team on racism and voting rights. And it said it's committed to fighting racism and racial discrimination both within and outside the Trump administration and to promoting civil rights, including the right to vote and the Black Lives Matter movement. But it talked about, you know, different things where I could see people who are already in office being a little scared of these types of movements, especially when you talk about things that are racially charged. But it said encouraging the continuation of work in Congress towards criminal justice reform, including sentencing reform and an end to mass incarceration of nonviolent drug offenders. But let's bring this down to the local level. What are we seeing on the local level with these types of movements?
In terms of progressive movements of fixing a lot of the issues, the reforms of the area, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, I think that what Aaron Ammons and Urbana did in terms of the marijuana law that they dealt with last year, I forgot the actual thing of it, but I think they reduced the fine in Urbana.
Okay.
And I thought that was a really good step forward. Mm-hmm. For addressing some of these issues. I mean, because when you look at the mass incarceration phenomena, of course, it's mostly nonviolent drug offenders. I mean, when you look at the data between 1980 and now, violent crime has plummeted across the United States, yet the prisons are privately owned and being filled up every day. Mm-hmm. So there is a horrific correlation there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think at the local level, you have different constituencies telling you, like, hey, these are the things that are affecting our communities right now. Like, we need, like, making us pay these fines for these drugs that aren't, you know, like, again, this, and like I said, we could do a whole historical analysis of the drug war in itself and the movements that have come out of that in terms of fighting against it. But we just have to be honest with ourselves that a lot of these issues have to come from the communities themselves. I think that if we have elected officials that run on these platforms, mm-hmm. that's fine, but it doesn't mean anything if the community doesn't consider it to be a necessity at that point.
Right.
And I think that, for instance, like when we talk about the economic disparity in Champaign right now, looking at the North End and other areas, mm-hmm. you hear a lot of people talking about jobs right now. Like, jobs are scarce in this area right now. And when we go door to door, that's what people are saying. Right. So that should be really the first thing. Like, the elected official, when they're running for a campaign, should have a full formalized plan of two or three options of what they plan to do the minute they are sworn in the office, or I don't know if they swear in locally, but you know what I mean, though. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah. I said, so there's
Kyle said they do.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are different mechanisms, and we could talk about different movements and whatnot, but if they're not coming from the people, if people aren't developing them and putting accountability, as Nisha said, on the elected official to do it, then you can have quotes like, yeah, civil rights reform or mass incarceration reform, and not really mean anything because there's no process, right, or mechanization behind it. And that's what we've been relying on for too long. And, you know, people don't like to hear it, but that's kind of what Obama did, is he used a lot of very fancy words and he said a lot of great things, but he did not do those things he said. And the fact that some of his policies dramatically exacerbated the housing crisis when he bailed out the banks and didn't bail out the homeowners after the 2008 recession. That was a huge betrayal of the masses, particularly African Americans, and the predatory banks and what they did to African Americans. And so that's what I'm saying, like, if you're going to say something, then you need to have a plan behind it. And it has to be not only supported, but it has to be directed by the people.
Because I think that was kind of the thing I wanted to focus on with what, you know, this group is talking about. You know, you have a lot of buzzwords and people saying they're going to do this or this or this. But, you know, kind of along the lines of what you're talking about with what Aaron did, on the federal level, you see, I think I just saw that they are talking about crazier punishments for drug dealers. I think I even saw something along the lines of the death penalty. Is that correct?
That's what the Trump administration is putting forth. And Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, supported him when he said that he wants death penalty for drug dealers.
What were you going to say, Kyle?
We have this really crazy thing going on right now in the country where somebody who is very immature and impulsive will type something into his phone and tweet it out, and a bunch of professionals have to do a song and dance to pretend that they're going along with it. So I will caution that I would be very stunned if we came to a point in this country where we started having the death penalty for people who are selling drugs. Now, not always very optimistic about things like that, but I feel like that might be part of the craziness that's going on.
Well, I think I saw that even tagged to abortion.
I think that was in some Western state, and I think it might have actually been a candidate or it was a state legislator who said that if there was, like, I think they said if there was, like, the death penalty for abortion, that would discourage people from getting abortions.
I wasn't sure I read that correctly when I saw it, and I thought, you got to be kidding. I wasn't sure I saw it correctly when I read it tied to drug convictions. Yeah. Like, what are we coming to? But I think that's what you guys are saying, is that we have this group of people who we know that the numbers, what the numbers represent as far as who's incarcerated right now. Mm-hmm. We know what their charges are versus the other demographics. We know, like you said, with the housing crisis, who that's affecting. I think we are very well aware, if people are willing to acknowledge the data that's there, we know who is getting the short end of the stick. But the problem comes with, how do you get this group to really do what their rights are, vote, be involved, change this into what should be a democracy, and make that difference. So, you know, for people who are listening who probably are nodding their heads with everything that you're saying and agreeing and wanting to be a part of it, what do you tell them when they say, yes, I am an African American, or I'm, like, a single parent, or I'm whatever I am, and I know I'm getting the short end? What do you tell them, Kyle, on how to get involved? Because that can be an overwhelming question sometimes for people.
Yeah, I mean, if certain groups don't vote, politicians who main goal and purpose is to get elected aren't going to reach out to those groups and aren't going to listen to those groups, because those groups won't matter to them.
Because they aren't voting?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I mean, there are plenty of examples. You know, we have a student debt crisis, and you don't see Washington putting any priority and even really talking about in a substantive way real solutions to that. Is it a coincidence that young people typically don't vote, mm-hmm. or don't vote nearly as much? And I think that to me, that's the key. And it's difficult, because if you feel like you don't have anything to vote for, and, you know, politicians aren't speaking to you, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to feel motivated that you should just go out there and do that. But I think that, you know, we saw in use Alabama for an example. Now, granted, I will say the reason why Doug Jones, the Democrat, won that race is because his opponent was accused of, being sexually inappropriate with underage girls when he was younger. But still, it was an election that was very narrowly won. And the reason why is because there's very, very large turnout in the black communities in Alabama. And part of the reason why is because Doug Jones is a former federal prosecutor who in the 90s successfully prosecuted the bombers of the church in Birmingham that killed the four little girls, mm-hmm. Amongst other just real genuine investments that he had made in the black community. Mm-hmm. You know, black voters are the most cynical voters in America, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was this big question in 2016 of why is Hillary Clinton dominating the black community and Bernie Sanders isn't? Mm. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, you have some guy who comes from New England who most of America did not know before that election, is coming around, he's promising really big things, or somebody who has had ties to the Black community for the past, 25 years. Now, right. Granted, we could have a long discussion about the effect of Bill Clinton's policies on the Black community.
Yep.
But the reality is, though, is that he is somebody who was seen as, like, affectionately called the first Black president or whatever. And
right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Had a lot of support within the Black community. And I think that explains why Hillary Clinton absolutely dominated the Black vote, because it takes a lot to gain trust within that community.
Well, and then you have these issues where, again, when we're talking about, again, if people look at the journey here, if you will, you have somebody who is incarcerated, and whether they're incarcerated appropriately or not, then you have them coming out as a felony. Now we have felons who aren't allowed to vote. So we see this progression of somebody starting out here, short end of the stick continuously. You know, there are states that work to keep felons from having the right to vote. So again, we have all of these people who, like we're saying, have seen presidency after presidency, people making promises, people saying, I'm going to be for you, and then they don't get involved. But we know, like Kyle's saying, we desperately need them to be involved.
I think we're kind of looking at this in a not the right way. I don't think voting is a tactic and not the strategy. Right. It's one of the tactics. If I'm talking to somebody that wants to get involved in fixing social conditions or improving change, I'm going to say that they're like, what are you interested in? What are your interests? Because, again, liberation is self-emancipatory. If I'm feeling like there's something wrong with my community or my environment, I'm going to want to do things to improve that. And one of the things can be voting. But there are so many other resources in terms of improving your community that if you are involved in doing this work and your consciousness does become enlightened and you really feel like there are things to do, then you'll definitely notice that a vote in the local areas can make a difference. So my argument is that the first thing we must do is we need to build social movements in our communities. And then voting can be a tactic that is built off of that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't think it's a great idea to ask people to just jump in and vote on something without actually knowing what their conditions are, what are the stakes of the vote, and all these other things that are involved in it. And I think a lot of it has to come from us building our communities and strengthening our communities. Mm-hmm. So that has to come first.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get them involved? Because again, you have a lot of people who, when headlines come out, they kind of play keyboard cowboys and they post online. But then there's, again, that disconnect between voicing that this is the issue I have and even getting involved, whether it's volunteering, whether there's a, like you said, there are so many ways people can start changing their communities one day at a time, neighborhood by neighborhood. So why, again, how do you think that disconnect happens?
It's about creating buy-in. We already said that the trust or lack thereof is there within these particular communities and demographic. You have to rebuild the trust. They're not just going to go just because we tell them. We have to show them and demonstrate the care and concern for the issues that impact them.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just, because primaries or generals are happening, knock on doors and hold sessions to talk to you. You have to do that continuously throughout the time that you're actually in office to get to know the people you're serving. We can't make it the constituents' responsibility to find out about what we're doing and what we're about. We have to take the lead in it. That's the whole point of politics, is leading your community.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you have to continuously come to them and find out, build that rapport and trust with them, and we'll see that trickle effect change.
So like the town halls you're talking about, it can't just be a one and done. It has to be a continued dialogue between yourself and the people you're representing. And I definitely agree with that, because you have a lot of people who feel like they're only interested when it's election time. And then that's, like you said, when they come around and they want to hear what I have to say, but how seriously are they taking it? And then 6 months down the road, like you're saying, when they have not done what they said they were going to do by just listening to me and hearing what I had to say, why would I, again, get involved? I think some people have said that the silver lining of the Trump administration is people may feel a little bit more motivated for that grassroots approach. They may feel a little bit more motivated, like you said, in being the solution, because they don't see the Hill being the solution anytime soon. I don't know if I've seen that yet, but obviously we're early in his administration. But I would hope that people see what happens when you don't get involved, whether it's voting or otherwise, if you aren't generating conversation, even people just having discussions within their churches, within their neighborhoods, within their communities on, here's what we need, here's how we need to get it. And where do we then maybe start pulling in our local leaders to call upon them to do what they said they were going to do in the first place, whether it's the city manager, the mayor, whoever it is? Who are we having these discussions with to start being part of the solution and being the reins on how that solution works? You were going to say something, Tanisha? Oh, okay. Go ahead, Doug.
I kind of feel it's the exact opposite. I think that there is an emerging consciousness that's being raised, not just in the United States, but around the world. Mm-hmm. When you look at the amount of social movements and militancy that is happening across the world, Venezuela right now are having labor strikes. Mm-hmm. The teacher strikes across the U.S. right now that are calling not only for higher pay, but also because a lot of the teachers now are not part of the sub-working class and have to take multiple jobs just to support themselves. Mm-hmm. They're talking about healthcare reform and not just basic reforms of fixing a couple of parts of the ACA, but they're talking about single payer universal healthcare, and these things are spreading like wildfires. So you have people who are getting involved more so than they have been in the past 20 years, and it looks a little different now because of the spatial reconfiguration of cities, because of the neoliberalization process that broke a lot of the urban areas apart. True, but you do have people finding ways to develop movements based on goals to fix their communities right now. And so I actually see an emerging social movement around the world right now to answer these things that we're talking about right now. And then voting will be something that people have to consider later on. But right now, people are awakening. It's a slow and gradual process. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget, most of the revolutions that happened around the world were 20 plus years in the making. And as of right now, when you look at the news happening around the world, there are a lot of disputes about the way people are being treated by their governments and their administrations. And so something is bubbling right now.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to go too far off the rails, but I think that a lot of this can be explained by the information age. The world is a lot smaller than it used to be. Information is a lot shared a lot more easily, and it's getting more and more difficult for governments to regulate that. Part of what made Twitter explode and become relevant was, I'm trying to remember the year now. I think it might have been 2009. There was a youth-led uprising in Iran, and the Iranian government shut down a lot of modes of communication. But what they didn't know about at that time, because it wasn't very socially relevant, was Twitter. And Twitter was utilized for them to coordinate and to, mm-hmm. you know, share messages. Not to mention just like video cameras. I mean, when we talk about the Black Lives Matter movement, I mean, you can take it all the way back to Rodney King. The reason why the Rodney King uprising happened is because of a video camera. Now, mm-hmm. everybody in this room right now, I guarantee you, has a video camera on them. Mm-hmm. And almost every room you go into ever, nearly everybody has a video camera on them. And right. they can not only record a video, but they can post it from their phone to where the entire world can access it. So I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, why we're seeing these social movements and these populist movements, because, you know, the message is not being as controlled anymore. Mm-hmm.
And the reason we don't see folks going out to vote related to that is because even though we have this hard and damned evidence that says this has happened and we can see it, people are still not being prosecuted for it even this number of years later. Mm-hmm. Like, when did Rodney King happen? And then we're seeing this mm-hmm. additional slaying of black and brown bodies, mm-hmm. despite body cameras that they're investing all of this money into, when it still doesn't impact the actual persecution of the people that inflicted the violence.
Mm-hmm. And that, I would say that probably adds to just a distrust of systems, period. And mm-hmm. systems are guilty by affiliation. You know, you lump law enforcement in with your elected officials with this, this, and this. And I think it's just hard to... I had one mom who I talked to in the local school districts when we were talking about her being a part of the PTA, and she said, no, that's a predominantly white middle class group that I see in my school. But it was also this idea that when she was talking to, this was quite a while ago when they were talking about like who gets expelled, who gets suspended, where those numbers are within just our local school district, you know, compared, I think it was, we saw data from, it was the Racial Justice Task Force, I think, that shared this, where we were saying that the data shows that we're worse than Cook County in the way our racial disparity works with mm-hmm. punitive measures within our school district. And that blew some people's minds because they thought there's no way that's a possibility. But again, she was saying that, because I shared that information because they had a report, but she was saying that, you know, that just kind of makes you want to throw your hands up and say, where does it work? That was her idea, was where does it work?
Well, that's what we need social workers inside of these spaces, right? We talk about in my class, social workers are superheroes, maybe not. But the fact that we recognize and see the intersections of all of these things and policies and how they play out and the knowledge and resources that we bring to the table. So empathy, compassion, yes, but also knowledge and research-based interventions that address the very groups that are impacted by these negative things, vulnerable and marginalized populations that we fight for based on oppression and things of that nature. And having social workers in local policy can really help that grassroots effort that we're talking about.
Well, and you know, this is, and I'm sharing this just because I'm a therapist, but you know, there are certain school districts within the area of Central Illinois who have policies that say external mental health professionals cannot come in and see students during the school day. They just have blanket policies. Mm-hmm. So if you're a therapist and you have a client and they have a mental health issue that's been identified by teacher, social worker, school psychologist, administrator, and you tell the parent, okay, this is your kid, fix this, but mom and dad work two jobs, so they can't get them to the office during office hours, or the agencies are so inundated that they don't have evening hours to devote to seeing a client, or mom and dad just don't have transportation. Mm-hmm. So now you're saying, we know where your kid is for this section of time during the day, but don't come into our school and bring this mental health service, which the school has asked you to take upon yourself to have. And so again, this is where I think, like you're saying, outside of the voting process, get involved, you know, work on the things that you can work on and be a voice where you can be a voice. If it's a matter of pushing on your schools to do, you know, things differently. Like, I agree with you guys. I think there's so many ways that people can get involved if they just take the time to figure out where they already are, what systems they're already involved in, because that testament, I think, like you're saying, from the social work perspective, I think that testament of knowing how the system has failed you gives you a chance to provide that feedback to your elected officials. But yeah, I mean, thank you guys for being on the show. This is definitely a larger topic, one that we probably need to revisit again, just so people have, if nothing else, that educational piece of what it looks like historically, what it looks like here, and then, like you were saying, how we exact that type of change. But yeah, Tanisha, if you want to get a shout out for what you're currently running for.
Tanisha King Taylor, currently the Democratic nominee for Champaign County Board District 10. You can learn more at TanishaKingTaylor.com.
Any other plugs, gentlemen on my left or right?
On the topic of social workers running for office, I actually just realized yesterday, Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona is running for the U.S. Senate, and she is a front runner in her race for the nomination. So just want to put that out there.
Yeah, definitely. Gus, no shout outs? Well, we will definitely, again, have to revisit this conversation, because it's, I think there's a lot of learning that needs to be involved with what actual change, not voting, but just change looks like. But like they say, if you don't acknowledge the past, you can never fully keep yourself from repeating it. So thank you guys for being on the show. I definitely appreciate it. This will be archived on my on WEF.org under Public Affairs in the know. You can catch this one as well as other shows that I've had, and we will have it live streamed and archived on my Facebook page. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions, and I will let our guests know. Thanks again.
Yo, man, we need to crank it back up. We need your drums.
I'm scared of that. It's that.
The type of people made the club before. Many a day has passed, the night has gone by, but still I find the time to put that bomb off in your eye. Total chaos, but these playoffs thought we was amps, and we're taking another route to represent the Dungeon family. Like Ray Day, me and my decide to take the back way. We stabbing every city, then we headed to that back cave. ATL, Georgia, what do we do? Fall ya, bulldogging like them Georgetown Hawkins. Boy, you signed the silly thing, my room is sitting pretty, doing donuts. Why you suckers like them suckers on Ron's? Damn, we the committee, gon' burn it down, but us gon' bust you in the mouth with the chorus now. Say, ah, ah,
push that bus, everybody move to the back of the bus. Do you wanna bump and slump with us? We the type of people make the club get crunk. Say, ah, ah, push that bus, everybody move to the back of the bus. Do you wanna bump and slump with us? We the type of people make the club get crunk.
I met a gypsy and she hit me to some life game to stimulate and activate the left and right brain. Say, baby boy, you only funky at your last cut. You focus on the past, be your hands what? That's what you live by, or either that's what you die to. I try to just throw it at you, determine your own adventure, Andre.
Got to a station, here's my destination. She got off the bus, the conversation lingered in my head for hours. Took a shower, kinda sour, cause my favorite group ain't coming with it. But I'm with you, cause you're probably going through it anyway. But anyhow, went and died, went on out and bought it, cause I thought it would be jamming. But examine all the flaws, get walls, get off lit, sand and it's costly, but that's all shit. Wrote, and I hope I never have to float in that boat. Up Sheep Creek, it's sweet, it's the last quote that I wanna hear when I'm going down. When all said and done,